Hello everyone, welcome to the second season of the series of podcasts with IEEE Electron Devices Society Luminaries. As the world's largest professional organization, IEEE plays a significant role to enhance the quality of our life. Electron Devices Society, or EDS, encompasses activities involving electron devices, the main enabler for today's digital world. I'm Muhammad Mustafa Hussain, a professor of Elmore Family School of Electrical and Computer Engineering of Purdue University. I play a variety of roles in different capacities within the Electron Devices Society of IEEE. In this series of podcasts, we will be interviewing those EDS members who have made remarkable impacts in our society through their innovations and dedication. Our guest today is someone who has made significant contributions in industrial and academic research and development of advanced CMOS transistors. We are speaking with Professor Suman Datta of Notre Dame University. Suman Datta is the esteemed son, chair professor of engineering at the University of Notre Dame. He is also an adjunct professor in the School of Electrical and Computer Engineering at Georgia Tech. Prior to that, he was a professor of electrical engineering at the Pennsylvania State University, University Park, from 2007 to 2011. From 1999 till 2007, he was in the Advanced Transistor Group at Intel Corporation, Hillsboro, where he developed several generations of high-performance logic transistor technologies, including high-k metal gate, tri-gate, and non-silicon channel CMOS transistor technologies. His research group currently focuses on emerging device concepts that could enable new computational models. He is a recipient of the Intel Achievement Award 2003, the Intel Logic Technology Quality Award 2002, the Penn State Engineering Alumni Association, PSEAS, Outstanding Research Award 2012, the SEMI Award for North America 2012, IEEE Device Research Conference Best Paper Award 2010 and 2011, and the PSEAS Premier Research Award 2015. He is a fellow of IEEE and the National Academy of Inventors. He has published over 375 journal and refereed conference papers and holds 185 patents related to advanced device technologies. He is the director of a multi-university Advanced Microelectronics Research Center, the ASCENT, funded by the Semiconductor Research Corporation, SRC, and the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, DARPA. In the fall of 2022, he will be joining Georgia Tech full-time as the Joseph M. Pettit Chair and Georgia Research Alliance Eminent Scholar. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
Great. So I'll start from the very beginning, and that starts from your childhood. So how was your childhood, your school life? Please share with us.
So I grew up in a city called Calcutta. It's a very big city in the state of West Bengal in India. And I grew up in a very different India than what it is today. I basically spent my early childhood in the 70s and 80s. India was, as some folks might know, was a closed economy, was a centralized bureaucracy. There were great things in terms of social progress, but there were also, being a closed economy, there was a lot of central government-controlled enterprises. So my father was an electrical engineer. He worked for the central government. He worked for Calcutta Port, which was a major port, and sort of the hub through which many of the goods got delivered to the to supply the eastern zone of the country. And my mother was a homemaker, taking care of me and my little sister, catering to every need at home. So I would describe my childhood as middle class to upper middle class family. We did not have any luxury items or anything like that, but we lived a very comfortable middle class life. I grew up in a central part of the city, of Kolkata, and in a colony. You can say it's a colony. That's the word we use because it was the British before independent India. They built the port. They built these quarters or these residential quarters for their officers. So I grew up in, because of my dad's service, I grew up in one of those buildings and residences. It was a very well-knit community. And we were very close because all our friends that I hung out with, their dads, it's their fathers, essentially worked for the same organization. We used to have our annual sports event. I'm a big sports fan, and I played almost three different types of games all throughout the year with my friends. But academics was always emphasized in very typical of Indian middle-class family. We had all these major festivals that we participated in, whether it was a play or a drama or a theater or a singing. It was a very good, comfortable life. As far as schooling, I ended up attending a very reputed school that went all the way from kindergarten to high school called the South Point High School. We are referred to as the Pointers because there are many of us who graduated from that high school and not only emigrated to United States, but to different parts of the world. And many of us are actually from that high school who are now faculty in the United States at major U.S. universities. So it was, as you know, that growing up in Kolkata, there is always a very strong intellectual connection. It's a city with a lot of colonial architecture, but it also has lots of museums and art galleries and book fairs, traditional food, temples. Music and theater. So I felt, I only have fond memories of my childhood, which I would say is a great amalgamation of tradition and some modernity. It's the land of Rabindranath Tagore, and I have fond memories of the sound of Rabindrasanghit, which is a music that's composed by Tagore that could be heard from every house almost on a daily basis. So it's all wonderful memories that I carry with me.
Great. You know, you pointed out to a specific word, and I'm going to pull this up. You said that luxury, right? You know, I think that in today's world, the main luxury is happiness. And I believe that you had it because you grew up in the city of joy, which is a bustling city and full of diversity, a symbol of progressiveness, as you mentioned, a center of intellectualism, the literature, the music, the dancing. There are so many different things, but more importantly, that I can connect to some of the things that you suggest you shared. That grew up and the going to different places all over the world. But I think the whole point, the experience is that growing up with a happy childhood, with others who share the same values is a huge asset and investment to start with for the life after, right? Okay. So thanks for sharing that. So my next question, Siobhan, is going to be about your college life as well as your graduate life. I believe the first one was in one of the IITs and then was in Ohio. And Ohio is going to host one of your former organizations, the recent installment there.
So let's talk about that.
So yes, I went to, after my completing my high school from South Point High School in Kolkata, I took, like many, many aspiring kids in India, I took the All India joint entrance examination for getting into the Indian Institute of Technology, IIT. I placed well, so it was good stars, and all the stars lined up because, you know, we are big believers in astrology. And I could go to any one of the five Indian Institute of Technologies, one being actually in my own home state. But I decided actually to leave my state. Part of the reason is as an 18-year-old, you are looking, you're just yearning for that independence. And I felt that let me go as far as I can from Kolkata in some ways. I decided to join IIT Kanpur. And it's near Delhi. When I arrived in IIT Kanpur, fortunately I was with my roommate ended up being my classmate from Kolkata, Anandarup Dasgupta. He's right now a chip design engineer actually in Silicon Valley. He's been doing this for a long, long time. And so me and Anandarup, whose short form ended up being Andy, we became roommates. And life in IIT Kanpur, if you have never been to Kanpur, you know, it's a very industrial town, mostly known for leather tanning industry. So it's not a city where you want to go out for sightseeing so much. But IIT by itself is a beautiful campus, very leafy, pretty much modeled after many of the US institutions. So we were kind of in some ways stuck to that campus. The best memories that I have of IIT is of course the very rigorous academic curriculum, but we also had a lot of fun. You know, it reminds me of the brotherhood, as you probably know, that IITs are not very well known for diversity. The incoming class, it was a very small class of 350 or less than that number of students who joined in our class. And there were 90% of incoming IITs were males, and less than 10% were women. So they have a lot of work to do on improving their diversity. And they're doing that. But at that time, you know, being in IIT Kanpur, it was a lot of that brotherhood. So we have great memories of not only being in the lecture halls, taking this very academically rigorous curriculum. We had a very steep grading system. These are practically kids that have, you know, never placed second in their life, and then they come into that IIT environment, and suddenly you start seeing them getting grades that they're not proud of or they don't want to share with their parents back home. So there was a lot of growing up in that environment, not only dealing with the rigors of the academic curriculum, but actually, you know, maturing and trying to find the purpose in life, what we want to do. Interestingly, you know, I met all sorts of kids from the entire Indian subcontinent. So the kids came from all parts of the country. And as you know, that India doesn't have even though Hindi is the national language, but we all spoke our own languages from each state. So there was a lot of for me it was an amazing experience to sort of experience the whole of India. I have always been in Bengal. I have been surrounded by the Bengali community, but going there, the exposure cross section just increased dramatically. I also saw that many students had different aspirations. Everybody was driven. Everybody was ambitious. Some wanted to come to the United States. Some wanted to go to a business school in India called the Indian Institute of Management, and I want to pursue a career in finance. Some wanted to join the Indian civil service and become a bureaucrat. So I think that my greatest experience there, other than the you know, the education I got, of the fine education I got in electrical engineering, was basically to start talking to people that that had all these different aspirations in life, and everything was possible. We were just full of aspirations, and everything seemed like within our reach.
Okay. So in electrical engineering, I can understand that, you know, your dad being an electrical engineer, so you were inspired by him. But in electrical engineering, you know that this is a very diverse field, right? From signal processing to control systems to device, to there are so many different aspects, power, energy systems, right? So what really motivated you to the electron devices, and how your graduate school actually shaped up that the what you are today?
So my father, actually his official degree was in applied physics. So he wasn't an electrical engineer per se. He went to a university, which is Calcutta University, but his specific college he went to was Presidency College under. So when I was growing up, he would tell stories of luminaries like Niels Bohr visiting Presidency College. Many of us are familiar with the name of Sutton Bose, S.N. Bose. And S.N. Bose was a faculty there, but he was at that time emeritus faculty. And my dad used to tell me stories about that volleyball match in Presidency College, where it's an intramural sport. And S.N. Bose would be sitting in the audience and watching that volleyball game. So yes, I did hear those kind of stories from my father, who got did his graduate work at both his undergraduate and graduate work at in applied physics at Presidency College in Rajabajar Science College. I think that was the name at that time. So that seed was implanted in me, if you will, from a very early childhood age. But I didn't hear about semiconductors for sure. I did hear from my father that there was another separate stream that was coming out called radio physics. That's what they called it at that time. And in radio physics, they were starting to look at valves, the vacuum tubes. And he said that, "I have heard in America," he was telling me one day, "that there is this new thing called semiconductor or solid state. And I don't know exactly how it works, but it starts with a very pure material, and they intentionally introduce impurities." So I heard these sort of rough, nebulous stories about semiconductor, but that word was probably not even mentioned. But I won't say that I had already made up my mind to study electron devices, let alone not even electrical engineering. But I always liked physics, so when I got the chance to arrive in IIT when I had to pick a major, electrical engineering seemed like a pretty good choice. And then within electrical engineering, while some of my friends chose other aspects of electrical engineering because they were more interested in math, I chose microelectronics as my sort of specialty, as much as you can specialize in an undergraduate program, because of my love for physics. So as part of my bachelor's thesis, or senior project, as we would call it in America, I worked on actually a device called HBTs, which is stands for heterojunction bipolar transistor. It's a high-speed device. My advisor or supervisor, my undergraduate thesis advisor, was a general professor named Dr. Bakir Mazari. Bakir Mazari was a newly minted faculty member. He finished his PhD at University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and he just joined, I think, 2 or 3 years before when I was there. And he said, "Well, there is this amazing device called HBT, different material systems. It could be group 4. It could be also compound semiconductor. And why don't you start writing, looking at this thing?" Basically, it was a simulation work. We didn't have any clean room capability at IIT at that time. So I wrote basically an analytical simulation program in C language that compared a silicon germanium HBT with an indium phosphide based HBT. So when I applied for grad school in the United States, I ran into, I applied to Cincinnati. Actually, I didn't do much, much exploration of what was going on, but I did know that I wanted to work on high-speed devices when I come here. And luckily for me, when I arrived in University of Cincinnati, which gave me a fellowship to come there, I ran into Professor Ken Roenker, who was basically a physicist by training, but at that time just got an NSF, National Science Foundation funded project to work on PNP HBTs. Okay, so not NPN, but PNP HBTs. And he said, since you have a background in HBTs, this was just a complete coincidence that I ended up working on the same topic that I was already looking at IIT. So I arrived in Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio. I was very surprised to learn that the football team, the American football team, the professional football team, is Cincinnati Bengals. And coming from West Bengal and being a Bengali, that was quite amazing that in the heartland of the United States, there is a team that is named after. So I was told that there is a very famous Bengal tiger in the Cincinnati Zoo. And that Bengal tiger is a majestic animal that you find in the Deltaic region near my hometown. It's an endangered species, but now there's a lot of nice conservation projects on this beautiful animal, and that was my sort of introduction to the university and the town of Cincinnati, with Bengals being one of the major professional teams there. So I worked on PNP HBTs for my doctoral thesis. And it was a very hard problem because, as you know, NPN HBTs, they can clock hundreds of gigahertz of frequency, and PNP HBTs are much harder, holes are a lot more sluggish. And I ran into another faculty member named Mark Kahe, who's right now the department chair of their electrical and computer engineering department. And Mark had just graduated from Purdue. And from, I think, Professor Shupriyadharu's group, and he was doing Monte Carlo transport simulation. So I got interested in working with Mark, and I was doing the experimental work, but also working with his group on some of the transport simulation. And it's kind of interesting that we were actually talking about at that time how to use strain to actually break the degeneracy between light holes and heavy holes. And so that we can actually inject the light holes and to enhance the transport across the base layer. So that was that collaboration that got me into a little bit on the strain physics, ballistic transport across the base of a heterojunction transistor. Of course, I then got interested. We had a very good clean room at Cincinnati. We had great collaborators who were growing these heterostructure materials. Anybody who has worked on HBTs will tell you that if you don't have good materials, if you don't have good junctions, then the device is going to be very, very poor. So fortunately, we formed some great collaboration with the Hughes Research Lab, HRL, in Malibu, California. And they were growing, they had this amazing MBE facility. So I used to do the layer structure design and send those design over to HRL. And then William Stankina was at that time running their high-speed group. They used to grow these materials, ship it over to Cincinnati, and then I'll go into the clean room to build these high-speed bipolar transistors. So we got up to 20 or 30 gigahertz type of devices and nowhere close to their NPN counterparts. But you know what, that experience of doing the device design, understanding the importance of high quality crystal growth, building devices, understanding strain physics, all that stuff, all came together later on as I progressed in my career. So I had a wonderful experience trying to, work on these millimeter wave devices. Both on the modeling side as well as on the fabrication side when I was in Cincinnati.
It's a great story, right? Like, you know, the infusing eventually the strain engineering and ballistic transportation. You know that when someone looks at your profile, starting from the HPT, then you worked on the, I think you are the first one who actually in one of the VLSIs presented the indium arsenide quantum nanowire at a very early stage. I think it's approximately 15 years back, if I'm not that wrong. Then you have worked on definitely the high chemical gate, but also the FinFET, right? And now you are pushing toward, like, on the, in a sense that it's like, you know, the completing the full circle, because you are bringing all those and ultra scale nano electronic devices, let's put it this way, right? So from all these different varieties of the advances that have been made through you, if you are being asked to choose one, you know, that which one that will be, that really makes you happy, that's number one. What are the, you know, the, if you have any associated memories with that, and definitely if there is any kind of eureka moment, you know, that this is a question that a kind of a little bit like, you know, the controversial, because some people do not believe in eureka moment, some believe, and some had small, some had a huge one like Archimedes. So yeah, let's share your insight and perspectives.
Mustafa, great question. So I am on that sort of this camp, if I will, if I can use that word, on that camp where I cannot say that I had a eureka moment. Being a technologist, which is what I, and an engineer at heart, I believe in that daily grind. So I'll tell you what I'm mostly proud of. So let me begin by saying that from the bottom of my heart, I'm extremely proud of my community, which is basically the semiconductor community, not just the device people like me, but also the people from process integration, from people who are growing this amazing materials, the module engineers. This community toil every single day, literally manipulating matter at the ultimate atomic scale, and are able to produce this wonderful devices and their integration into integrated circuits. So I'm very proud of what this community has achieved as a collective effort. I never believed that it's going to be that one fine morning I wake up and I have this amazing idea and I'm going to go and do this one experiment and that experiment will come out and will solve all the scaling problem or the performance problem. It I have never encountered that in my career. So what I want to point out to is that I have never encountered a situation where you start off with saying that, hey, I want to discover this, and then end up discovering exactly what you wanted to. What my philosophy, which I've shared also in other forums with our community, as well as the next generation engineers who are coming down the pipeline, is that there is a sense of serendipity that I have experienced. And serendipity in the sense that my first project when I joined Intel, tell the audience here, I ended up after I graduated from Cincinnati, my goal was that I was, or my dream was that I'll be working in Malibu, California with one of these research labs that are doing high-speed devices, millimeter wave devices for communications, satellite communications particularly. But because of my foreign student status, that didn't happen. And I ended up actually joining Intel in their technology development group. And then very quickly, I moved into their logic transistor R&D group that was headed by Dr. Robert Chow. When I started working in that advanced transistor group, our first project truly was right after the strain channel devices. We talked a little bit about strain physics. So that was like a kind of, going around in a coming back in a full circle. We started working on this high K project. It was supposed to be originally high K and polysilicon. And that's when I actually came to know you, Mustafa, the work you were doing at UT Austin and then in conjunction with Sematech. And the high K project was an amazing project in a lot of ways. I learned not only just the device physics aspect, so I was the device lead on that, but I also understood the importance of the materials physics, the chemistry, the process integration, the decisions that we took in terms of completely reinventing this is dual damascene replacement gate process, convincing Intel management that that we are on the right track that we have to embrace this high risk integration scheme in order to make this technology work. All those things taught me all the essential things that you need to do in order to make a real technology to work at that scale. So it is not about that I found the remote optical phonon physics and how it affected electromobility. Yes, we characterized that. We understood exactly what those scattering physics is, but that's just one piece of these million other pieces that have to come together. And in order for those million pieces to come together and work seamlessly, in order to have a commercial technology, I started appreciating the importance of that daily grind, that you have to shed that blood, sweat, and tear every day before you get to that point. The other point I want to highlight for our audience is that we get a lot of credit because on the research side, because we're the first ones to write these papers, and eventually it becomes if it becomes a successful technology, you get a lot of credit for that. But if your research team is not working hand in hand with your technology development folks, it's not like there's a wall and you throw this prototype over the wall and let them run with it. It is actually breaking down that wall and working together and working out some of the barriers, lower those barriers down, only then when research, TD, and then eventually the handover to manufacturing, all these things has to happen before you see that large scale impact. So to come back to your original question, yes, I'm very proud of my contributions to the high-K metal gate technology, and then down the line, the Tri-Gate / FinFET technology. But I'm always very proud of the team effort that went into this thing. The support from the leadership, the management that put their trust into this team, and literally made available every possible resource that you need to make these things happen in reality.
Yeah, I have interviewed many, one of the things about this portion of your interview is going to be, I would say, a moment of truth, because many times I hear we are going to replace this or then and that, but I feel the being in the industry, when we switched to academia, but we had to work with others. That's the dependency, right? It's a ecosystem of hunger, and on the only way that a benevolent hunger, but only way that we can, I think, thrive is when we are working together. And it is kind of sometimes I feel I get sometimes angry that it is an insult to the thousands of people who are working, that I used to have colleagues who used to work on the night shifts over the weekend. We used to call some lots, rocket lots, that we have to get the result in six days, right? These are the people, they have to hand carry them, right?
Yes.
It's not, and they lined up the next equipment because some of them, they needed to have vacuum done, right? So all these things, they have to be in line before we you know, we record our next TikTok video, right? So I think like on that this theory of, or this illusion of like, you know, replacing something, that's a great vision might be, but it takes a lot of effort and I would say concerted, like, you know, the teamwork.
I agree with you 110% on this one. And my advice always, what I've learned from my own career, my own experience, is that it's very important for me to have a sense of identity of who I am. It's very important for me to have a sense of my core strengths in terms of the fundamentals that I am very solid on, my anchor points. And that's the value that I'm bringing to the table. And if we can pick all those right people and get the right people on the right bus and put them in the right seats, then these people all start working together to make these magic happens. And for that, there has to be that mutual respect, that mutual trust, and then the collaboration starts happening. Leadership matters a lot, as you can imagine, in a team environment. But that comes mostly from the fact, and I'm saying this thing specifically in the context of complex engineering tasks and complex engineering mission. What we do in the semiconductor industry when we are putting forward a new technology is no different than building that rocket that's going to travel to Mars, or building the International Space Station. This is deep tech. This is just hardcore engineering, where the problem has been broken down literally into a million pieces, and each piece has been cleverly optimized and then put it all back together. And everything has to work seamlessly. If it doesn't, then you don't have a technology. It can fail either at the materials level from defects or yield issues. It can fail at the device level because of variation or aging, the reliability physics aspect of it. It can fail at the circuit level. So there are so many. It can fail at the applications level. So I think that I just want to emphasize that these complex engineering tasks that we are designing, demonstrating, and delivering is a team effort, but it's very important to have folks with very strong domain expertise, but at the same time they have a good understanding of the other person's area as well.
Right. Okay, Siobhan. So we are going to actually switch to a very popular segment, which we call the rapid fire round. And here we anticipate that your answers are going to be in 1 to 2 words, but you can, like, you know, you can have your own verbiage. That's okay. So whenever you are ready, I'm going to ask this set of questions. Okay. This is a very popular segment for our younger audience.
Go for it.
Okay. What are your hobbies?
Reading and listening to podcasts.
Very good. Okay, so you helped us making our podcast popular. Okay, very good. Anyway, movie or music? Which one you like more?
Music.
Which genre of music you like the most?
Going to start with songs by Tagore, to Bollywood film songs, to symphonic classic rock.
Okay. What is your favorite cuisine?
Bengali cuisine. In particular, Bengali dessert.
Okay. What is your favorite travel spot?
Family vacation on a beach, particularly Hawaii.
Okay. What is the book you are reading now?
India Unbound by Gurcharan Das. Excellent book.
Okay. So now we have entered the last part of our conversation. And this is where we are going to look into the future through your eyes and your mind. Okay. So my first question from that perspective is, what is your thought about the future of electronics?
I'm going to start off with saying that the future of electronics and the importance of electronics is very critical and more important than ever. And particularly on the hardware side. Today, I will start off first with the workforce development side. Today in electronics, compared to the software and the data science and the computer science of side, we are not getting enough students who are interested in microelectronics and in circuit design and electronics hardware. We need to make sure that we highlight the importance and also the future of electronics. So in a podcast like this, it becomes imperative on folks like us and thought leaders to talk about not the end of or the demise of Moore's Law, but more about the future of semiconductor devices, not only for just logic and memory and storage, but also for analog, mixed signal, et cetera, et cetera, and others from the display side. In terms of electron devices, if you look at logic, the future is definitely going to be about monolithic 3D. As we run out of space in one horizontal plane, we will definitely figure out a way to stack transistors. How tall that stack would be and exactly in what shape are we going to use it, it remains to be seen. And that's the excitement, is that we have to need very smart people and very motivated people in this field to figure out how the next generation logic transistor in the 3D configuration will look like. We will use every available space above the transistor, which we have done already traditionally. We will use every space underneath the transistor. And for whether it's power delivery, for maintaining different voltage islands, voltage delivery, regulation, we will be using every aspect of that silicon substrate and the layers that we put on top of each other. I think that there is a lot of excitement also on the memory side. We will see a lot of the development that we have had in the logic side spill over into the DRAM. So there's a huge potential in terms of scaling in that sense for incorporating all the innovations in logic on the peripherals, on the memory controller side. There is enough to be done on the memory side. Going back to storage type memory, you're going to see new materials potentially. You're going to see new forms of gate stacks. You're going to see more logic getting integrated with storage memory to do some of the logic functions in the storage itself. So, in a nutshell, I feel extremely positive and optimistic about the future of just pure device level work that we can do. Of course, on top of that, we are going to see with hybrid bonding and advanced packaging, more and more complex microsystems getting assembled and performance continue to increase. We are extremely fortunate to be working in an industry where there is almost an unending sort of need for higher and higher performance and more energy efficient compute and storage. There are many, many applications that are screaming for more and more capability being provided by the hardware. That said, I also believe that the future hardware engineers need to be more cognizant of the applications. I'm not necessarily saying that they need to understand and talk to software developers, but they need to talk with hardware architecture people or microarchitecture people. And that comes back to us, the academics, in how we teach courses, how we motivate students, how we inspire them, so that we don't get stuck in this, what I call local minima of Moore's Law ending, or we are now down to the last atom, and this is not a career I want to be in, and I want to go and do data science, or I want to do machine learning. Machine learning and data science will continue to grow, no doubt about that, but they need these extremely capable hardware that only a hardware person or semiconductor community, that is our community, the electron device community, can offer. I also want to say that that even at the taking advantage of advanced packaging, the world of photonics that was not directly related to us is going to be very closely now integrated with electronics. So I find this is one of the best times, to be honest with you. I feel like, you know, I was much younger now and starting all over again in this field and retraining myself as I'm going through the university grad program to be an active contributor and an active participant.
I'm going to make 3 points on this. So on one of my conversations in one of the previous podcasts, I made a comment. It was with Richard Moeller. And my comment was that, you know, that today, because we have this handheld smart device, and that's why we see Uber, Lyft, TikTok, or whatever, So I think every 15 to 20 years, if there is great hardware that is being developed, and then the rest will follow. And we have 20 years time frame to actually work on next generation, the game changing hardware. So that's one. Second, yesterday I was having a conversation with Professor Sanjay Banerjee of UT Austin. And he also mentioned about that, every time, he said that in the last 20 to 25 years that he read so many articles about end of Moore's Law. And, my personal perspective is Moore's Law is a vision. It is a philosophy to keep moving with a quantifiable goal. It has nothing to do with doubling the transistors in a given area. That's an example. It's sort of like that, right? So people most probably don't understand that, that they ran out of space. It's not about running out of space. It's a question of, have we run out of opportunities, mm-hmm. right? No, that is not the point. So, and the third question that you already answered is that, if you were given the opportunity to rethink whether you would have chosen a career in electron devices, from what we are hearing, I think you would have jumped into the electron devices again and again.
That is exactly right. And, I was pondering over that, if I were to do start all over again, what would I do? I talked about listening to music. I would rather be a singer, but I know that I'm not good enough to be a professional singer and make a living. So my next best choice would be to become a device engineer. And we are going through this radical, and a very fast digital transformation of every aspect of our life. And we need all the silicon that we can get our hands on to have a sustainable modern society. So you are absolutely right about Moore's Law. Moore's Law is an aspirational thing, right? It is about being competitive. It's basically, to me, as you mentioned, Mustafa, it is about free market economics at play. If I don't do it, someone else will do it. And that's the competition that keeps us going. The doubling of the transistors is just one way to quantify it and putting on a chart. It worked. It still works, but at a higher level, it is an aspirational goal. And then what comes out of that directly is all the wonderful products that one can build when such a technology becomes available. So yes, you're right. I think we have next decades or so to keep coming up with these inventions, and we don't know how far. Now we are in the middle of this revolution, this fourth wave of computing, as some people say, or industrial 4.0. As Jensen Huang from NVIDIA talks about, is that we are manufacturing intelligence at a scale that we have never seen in the history of mankind. And that's artificial intelligence. And that would not have been possible if we did not have these exciting semiconductor technology that we need. So yes, I'm completely in agreement with you this is a field that will keep growing. This is a field where we want more young minds to come. And with their help and with us, we'll have a great future forward.
Great. So from that perspective, my next question is, what is the application that you aspire for, which does not exist today?
Infinite battery life, that would be great.
Okay.
So I think what I'm trying to say is that ultimately, yes, we can produce all the chips in the world. We can assemble the greatest and the most powerful computes systems. But there is a price to pay, and that's about energy, the carbon footprint, and the energy sustainability. So whatever we do, we have to figure out how to deliver the best products, how to deliver the best technologies, how to deliver the best applications and services with ubiquitous intelligence that we as all benefit from within a certain carbon footprint that we all agree on. And, yes, we will have the Bitcoin miners. We will be doing searches. We will be spending a lot of time on social media, tweeting playing TikTok videos, but at the same time, it is our onus, it is our responsibility to produce these advancements that delivers that performance, but with the ultimate energy efficiency that we can get to. And there is a lot of room in terms of where we are today and where we can get to before we hit some very fundamental limits. And I think that it's not an application. In terms of application, what would be wonderful? It would be wonderful. I'm going to turn to entertainment here for a second. That if I can watch, I'm a big sports fan. I don't know whether I mentioned there. If I can sit in my living room and have this real-time immersive experience with some device which doesn't give me headache or doesn't cause nausea, that would be something cool.
Okay. So from that perspective, what sport do you enjoy?
I might get into trouble for saying that, but it is not cricket. Currently,
you are cursed.
I really enjoy watching football, the American football. I'm a big sports fan. I truly enjoy all types of sports. But if you ask me, if you really press me on what would be right on top, it will be the American football.
Okay. Hey, so my next question, I think it has some relevance with your previous response, that do you see something that could have been better, but it's not today like that way? It can be anything, from politics to electron device, from sports to finance, whatever, social injustice, whatever the way you, it's your free time.
Yes, I do think about a lot of the current situation. I think I hinted on, particularly in the context of carbon footprint and what we need to do as a community from our side to do our part in terms of still delivering the best experience for users, but at the same time, being very cognizant of the energy consumption of electronic systems at every level, whether it's mobile or whether it's in the cloud. So that one aspect is definitely, I think about. The other part is more in the context of the larger geopolitics that's at play today. Increasingly, we are starting to see, particularly in the context of electron devices or semiconductors at large, that there are a lot of tensions in terms of our relationship with China. At the end of the day, I personally believe that that the world, the global community, will be much better served if we figure out a way between the United States and China to level to see eye to eye, work out a way to see work through our differences, and figure out a way where we can cooperate, collaborate, exchange ideas, still respecting each other's intellectual property. I have benefited a lot from having wonderful colleagues from that part of the world. When I was in Intel, subsequently the students that I hired, and later on through collaborations. Right now, we are at a stage in the world today where we are actually constructing barriers. We're putting up barriers, and that is something that's going to slow down progress at a time where we need to accelerate progress. My aspiration is that at some point we will have to get past our differences. We have to figure out a way to work because ultimately this is a global effort, and there are a lot of good ideas out there. There are a lot of good ideas that come originate here in this part of the world. And everybody will be better served if we figure out how to work together going forward. Maybe that's a dream. Maybe things are not going to improve in the very near term. But I'm very hopeful that in the future we will be able to work together again and make the progress that we need to in order to improve. Semiconductors in order to train basically a large population of young minds that are going to carry on the torch once we decide to retire. So it should be a global community when it comes to advanced semiconductors, and not the kind of semiconductor nationalism that we are currently seeing in different parts of the world.
Yeah, of course. Like, if there is competition, let it be healthy and hearty.
Absolutely.
Okay. My last question from the scripted question, and that is your one suggestion for the younger generation.
Be curious, inquisitive, feel free to explore, but at some point, try to converge. Try to find that one anchor point. Keep honing your skills around that anchor point. Establish your identity and carve out your space. No matter how small, how big, carve out your own space in this big world and be aspirational. That's the value you bring. That's the value you create. And that's what will ultimately make you happy and content.
Thank you for attending this IEEE EDS-sponsored podcast. To listen to other EDS podcasts, as well as benefits and resources EDS offers, please go to the website eds.ieee.org. Thank you for listening.